khona ushephe sinto mhlangana ayanda. Sisamlindile mama Linga.
Hawu ngize ngithi ngidukile. Good morning.
Morning. Awudukanga, uyeza utry uconnecta.
Yes. Good morning, honorable members. Please accept my apology. I'm hotspotting where I am, so I'm trying to manage the situation. Sorry about that small hiccup. Are we making a quorum, Miss Boss? And Ari?
Yes,
we can continue. Wow, Kilangul.
Oh, okay. No, I see. But we do form a quorum at this stage. Good morning, honorable members and the department and the staff of the committee. I know that CGS is here today for their presentation on the Montino project. Are there any apologies, Ms. Boss and Ari?
So the following apologies, sir. Ms. Onyana, who's unable to attend the meeting as he is writing exams today, sir. And then Mr. Ngumalo, who's attending a PC on public works and infrastructure. And then we've also received an apology from the Minister of Minerals and Energy, who's attending NCCC meetings today, sir. Those are the apologies received, Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Mylem is also asking to be excused as he's having a doctor's appointment at 12, so he will leave the meeting early. And I'm trying to sort Mr. Bilangulu to connect.
I hope by 12. That's exactly the time we should be finishing. We might be done by that time. Okay. I see that Honorable Phillips is also having a similar or closer similar challenge. I hope she has finally made it in. Is also
yes,
hotspotting. She's also hotspotting. Or is in the meeting now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Having said so, can we now give it to the DG for his entity, which is the Council for Geoscience. DG.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to Honorable Members, and also the Chair of the CGS Board and the CEO, DDGs, the chief director, support staff to the portfolio committee and ministry. Chair, as you have correctly pointed out that today we'll be receiving a presentation from CGS. Now, here we are going to give honorable members an update in terms of the work that has been done and that actually CGS continued to do in the Eastern Cape at the Maldino in the coal fields. Now, I'm going to hand over to the chair of the board to give his introductory remarks. Then after that, the CEO will come in with a detailed presentation. Thank you very much, Chair. Over to you, Chair of the Board.
Good morning, Chair of the PPC, honorable members of the PPC, DG, and every staff member of the DMRE. We are proud to present, the Maldino project. But I must just say that with the work that we do at the CGS, especially with the multidisciplinary project that that is underway, we are finding very interesting results. But we just want to give you a taste of what we found in the Maldino project. I'll give over to Mr. Mabuza to give the presentation. Thank you.
thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG. Good morning, Chair of the PPC and honorable members. I just want to make sure that technology is on my side. Is the presentation visible to members?
Yes, we can see it, Mr. Mabuza.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So we will give you an update on the geoscientific assessment that we have done in the Maldino Indwe. Coal fields. Now, we thought to give some context of what our objective was. Ours was to assess the quality and the quantity of the coal within the Maldino in the coal fields in the main to support the integrated resource plan as gazetted in 2019 by our Minister of DMRE, and to also say to honorable members and South Africans at large that if you look at this picture here, it gives you a sense of existing coal fields in South Africa. What is in red here? That's the Maldino. Mpumalanga is here. This is the Vryburg and the Eitrach area in KZN, the Kwanongoma and the surrounding areas. This is the Vaal in the Vaal area, where there is a Letaba power station, and I'll talk to that a little bit. This is another Free State coal field that is still untapped. This is the Springbok coal fields in Limpopo that is still untapped. The Waterberg and the one in the Venda area, and so on. So we still have untapped coal resources yet to be quantified, but we suspect it's well over 100 billion tons. We are blessed with coal, and we have problems of climate change that confront the world over. And as a science council, we believe that scientific intervention can assist in mitigating significantly the risks of climate change impact, and science should be given a chance to demonstrate that in its entirety. And I will talk to that in more detail later. So let me come back to the assessment of the extent in terms of quality and quantity of the coal in the Molteno. Now, just to give you a sense, this is Maclay, the town of Maclay, and that coal, the one that is in gray, this is this one does not find surface expression. It's not buried very deep, but it is underground. And the one that is colored is the one that finds expression on surface. As we call it in geology, it outcrops. You'll see that it runs quite extensively from the eastern part of the town of Maclay through various towns, Indwe being one, Molteno, and tips over all the way to Lady Grey. And there is this part in the Free State, in the Zastron area, that is also known. We have not fully understood this entire basin. This is what we know currently. We suspect that it is dipping to the north and that it might be going beneath the Lesotho mountain ranges. So we put two master students to characterize the basin fully, the Molteno Indwe basin in its entirety, so that we can continue to gain a deeper understanding of this coal field. So what did we do as the Council for Geoscience? Our mantra here is that whenever we're taking science to society, we must make sure that society is sufficiently briefed and engaged so that they can appreciate that we are bringing science to society, so that science is not done in abstraction, but it finds applications in addressing societal problems. So we engaged comprehensively with the stakeholders in the area. That includes two district municipalities, five local municipalities, five wards, 14 wards were consulted. And we also consulted with the farming community. We experienced a bit of a resistance from only one commercial farmer in the Molteno area. The rest of the farmers were very cooperative in terms of our value proposition. In doing this work, we've looked at existing data before we did anything else. We found that there were 97 borehole logs from our database that had coordinates. 27 of those derived from the Molteno area and 70 in the Indo area. These boreholes were drilled between December 1947 and February 1987 by various companies, including the then Geological Survey of South Africa, a precursor of the CGS, as well as Genco Limited, Goldfield South Africa Limited, amongst others. So in terms of the new data that we collected after we consulted with the stakeholders, we sampled the seams, both in the Molteno and the Indre area. Out of the six known seams in the Molteno, the most prominent are Indre and Guba. We collected 68 surface and subsurface samples, and we prepared all these samples internally. And in terms of the analysis, there were various analyses that were done on these samples. These included proximate analysis. So what we derived from proximate analysis is chirolithic value, sulfur content, ash content, volatile matter, as well as moisture content. But we also conducted ultimate analysis, which gives us a sense of carbon, hydrogen, nitrogen, and oxygen. We further undertook SRF analysis, as well as what is called ICP-MS analysis, that is inductively coupled plasma mass spectroscopy analysis. Now, from all these analyses and consideration of previous data and current data, we then went to the drawing board and computed various models so that we can gain an understanding of how does the thickness of these seams vary from one end to the other, how deep are they, what kind of other characteristics of this cone are existing there. So the next two slides are really, honorable members, giving you an extent of an idea of how the thicknesses of the seams are varying from one end to the other. So that was part of the study that we have done. We also made an interesting observation that where there are abundant dolerite intrusion in these coal fields, there appears to be enhanced quality of the coal, particularly in the in-basin, where the coal tends to be more anthracitic in characteristics. In the Molteno area, we know that there are less intrusions of dolerite and as compared to the Molteno, as compared to the Indo area, and therefore those coals tend to be more bituminous in character. So, with the information that I have just indicated, based on both previously collected information that was hosted here at the CDS, as well as the samples that we conducted, we were able to broadly characterize the types of coals across the coal field as indicated there. So what do we see from the analysis that I have just referred to? I'd indicated that there were proximate analyses of 68 samples collected in the Molteno Indo coal field. What we find is that the Guba seam in the Indo area yielded average values of calorific value of 16.6 megajoules per kilogram. That's the CV value. What we do know is that in the Val area that I indicated, where there is the Letaba power station, the CV values there are about 14 to 16 megajoules per kilogram, which demonstrates that it is indeed possible to design a solution that is tailor-made for the quality of the cone that you are looking for. The ash content is a little bit high at 47, and the volatile matter is extremely low at 7.7, but what is even more encouraging is that the sulfur content is almost non-existent. Now, the importance of sulfur is that where sulfur is elevated, we know that when you start mining, and or storing coal that sulfur concentrates and can form acid mine drainage. And here we absolutely do not have the risk of AMD at all with the possibility of extracting this coal. In the Indo-Sea, the catalytic value is around 14.6 megajoules per kilogram. The ash content is even higher at 56%. The volatiles are marginally below 10%. Moisture content 1.8, and sulfur even more depressed at 0.2. I think I've already made the point around sulfur being significantly lower than some of the known coal fields such as Mpumalanga in the Emalahleni area, as well as the Limpopo province, which translates to low risk of acid mine drainage when coal is mined and or stockpiled. We stumbled across a technology which we are yet to test and validate. We engaged with the American owners of the technology. They are willing to share their knowledge with us. Members would know that we had been tasked to do carbon capture, storage, and utilization project. That, in essence, is a post-combustion intervention. That continues to be explored to check if the possibilities of applications of CCUS can indeed help the country achieve its commitment on mitigating carbon emissions whilst using the abundance of coal resources that it has. What this new technology is, it is a pre-combustion technology. It is particularly interesting there, based on preliminary information that we had, in that the coal is put through an electrolytic setup, and that has to be heat to a minimum of around 80 degrees Celsius. And when you do that, for every 10 tons of coal that you subject to that process, you are able to produce a ton of hydrogen. Now, hydrogen has many applications, and so one is able to generate extra revenue from the applications of hydrogen. Secondly, you are able to recover the rare earth elements in the event that the rare earth elements are there, and we will demonstrate later what our findings are in respect of rare earth elements. So there are possibilities of generating two additional revenue sources, but in terms of the climate change debate, what does this technology do? The first thing is that it reduces the carbon emission pre-combustion by 85%. So this could get us to meet and exceed our commitment that we have made while we are using coal as part of our just transition policy as a country. That is the significant part. The second part is that it can reduce the ash content by between 45% and 60%. And it increases the volatiles. And so before the treatment and after the treatment, you get a much higher quality coal. So the catalytic value would also be substantially elevated. So I'm bringing this here, honorable members, so that you can see that we are putting not an argument that says just burn the coal and ignore all the important things that are happening around us as members of the global society. But we are saying that there is coal in abundance, there is technological interventions that can help us to grow with the coal and transition with the coal to the low carbon economic growth trajectory. I am sure that South Africans will not have a problem at all if we continue to use coal, provided that we can give them the assurance that the technological interventions that we are putting forth are indeed compliant with the commitments that we have made as a member of the global community, as it were. And making sure that we achieve environmentally friendly development, as it were. We further undertook petrographic assessment of a number of coal surfaces, and our preliminary results are very exciting, members, honorable members. They show that there are signs of rare earth element enrichment. We see value ranges from 100 to just below 500 parts per million. In certain instances, we even see significantly higher concentration. But we have said that let's not take the anomalies at this stage. Let's work on the reasonable range while we continue to do this petrographic assessment that will indicate whether rare earth elements are indeed concentrated in this coal. Now, this will be the first in South Africa that rare earth elements are confirmed to be occurring and coexisting with the coal. These are exciting times indeed. I think that honorable members know the importance of rare earth elements, including the application of these rare earth elements in other renewable technologies, which renewable technologies we may not have without these rare earth elements. And so to the extent that South Africa can become a significant supplier of rare earth elements beyond the traditional sources that we know, we are now finding the non-conventional source of rare earth elements in the coal field. For us, as scientists, these are indeed exciting times. So what sort of tonnages do we come to after all is said and done? We have characterized these in the various seams, and we are finding that, you know, if you don't use any cutoff, we're projecting 527 million tons, a very conservative, I must add, and based on available information. We would rather take a conservative approach rather than overstate the possibilities that are there. We have applied a geological loss factor of 15% in calculating this 527. We also applied specific gravity of 1.75. Now, when we use 0.8 cutoff, we then permuting the same seams as we did in the previous slide, you'll see that there's a slight reduction to 472 million tons. Snellman estimated in 1998 that there is in situ coal seam of just below 478 million tons, and he applied a 0.9 meter thickness cutoff. At CGS in 2011, we estimated about 460 million tons in situ tonnages, and at that time, we applied 0.5 meters thickness cutoff. The point of this slide is to make honorable members aware of the sensitivities of the tonnages based on the efficiencies with which or of the thickness cutoff. So let me see, the lower the number, the lower the tonnage in the main. And so if you increase the thickness, the increasing. Here is really to show the relationship between the thickness and the tonnage. And you can see the inverse proportion of the curve demonstrates that if the thickness cutoff is increased, the tonnage estimate is inversely following that trend. So from all of that, what potential value can be generated from this? We estimate that at a cutoff of 0.8 meters and using 68% economic recovery after processing, it indicates that we can recover just marginally over 320 million tons. And when we apply a very low value of 350 rand per ton, this is 122 billion rand direct value that can be generated from the coal that is on the ground. This is exclusive of any applications of the coal that has the potential to generate even more growth possibilities going forward, and we propose some of those. So what is our summary of our assessment? As it was our primary objective to assess the extent of quality and quantity of the coal. We now know that this coal ranges from anthracite to bituminous, from the east to the west area, and this observation is consistent with existing literature by the likes of McDonald, who have characterized it exactly the same way in 1986. We find that the Guba seam in the Indo area displays better quality of coal in the Montino Indo coal fields and represents the most economically viable potential in that area. The Guba seam in the Indo area is a little bit deeper than the Guba seam in the Montino area, although in the Indo area we know that there's better quality. The Indo seam in the Indo area represents the least economically significant coal as compared to the Guba seam based on available data. Overall, we know that the coal tonnage in the study area is about 530 million tons, of which 473 million tons is applicable at the thickness cutoff of 0.8. We also know, as indicated earlier, that the direct value generated is estimated at around 122 billion rand. But that on its own is not enough. So in terms of our primary objective in the Council for Geoscience, the work that we have done in 2019-2020, phase one of the project we have completed, and that is what we have just put to you. Phase two of the project includes further geoscientific studies to confirm the concentrations of rare earth elements, as I had indicated earlier. The second part of that geoscientific study is relating to basin characterization. We have put two master's students to help us with that basin characterization and see what else can be uncovered and confirm some of the hypotheses that we have, such as the northward dipping cone that goes beneath the Lesotho mountain range. That, in the main, is the phase two of this work, and it's a subject of work in progress. Our scientists in the lab are analyzing these samples and interpreting them as much as the technology allows. The phase three is a proposal from our side for consideration of a PPP in the construction of a modular power plant with conditions for clean coal technology applications, so that we are consistent with the commitments that we have made. We are already involved in the post-combustion clean technology considerations. We know that the technology is there, and we know that the cost may be higher at this stage, but we are still looking at the technology at this stage. But I've also shared with you that we have just come across the technology that is more pre-combustion. We would be looking at that as well to see the extent to which that technology can be applied, so that we are truly putting across a value proposition that takes into consideration our developmental requirements, our environmental commitment, as well as international commitment that we have made. And that package view is indeed possible in our view. And we think that this modular power plant construction can be completed within a period of 2 years with the streamlined approvals across the spectrum of government authorities. Part of the just transition consideration, I've spoken at length about the carbon capture, utilization and storage. I think I, with your permission, Chair, I can skip this slide. What this slide demonstrates, again, the various coal fields in South Africa, the Multino Indwe is this one here. That's the Zastron part in the Free State. In green here, those are the those green triangles are the possible storage sites for carbon that has been captured. So we've looked at the geology across the country. Those black circles are the sources of carbon emission, and you can see very close to many of these carbon emissions are the green dots that indicate geological settings that are suitable for carbon sequestration in the event that the country were to move in that direction. What excites us about this packaged value proposition is that the carbon that is captured here, in the event that it were to be sequestrated, it also has, there's a hypothesis that the sequestration of carbon can further induce geothermal prospects. So the background colors is the preliminary geotherm map of the country that we have put up. The areas that are deep red, those are the areas of highest potential for geotherm. And so if that were to induce more geotherm, therein lies the correlation and applications of science to demonstrate that hydrocarbons and renewable energy should not be enemies, as it were. We can pitch them side by side as coexisting proposals for development, taking due consideration of the needs of environmental stewardship and longevity beyond our life in this life that we are living today. So what are the possibilities? The first one, we have already put up the proposal for a modular power plant for energy generation. We know these are the characteristics of the coal that is used in the Letaba power station near Vereeniging. They are not very different from the coal that we have in the Multino power station. We know that in Mpumalanga you are looking at CVs of 23, 25 that are much higher. So you're not looking at the power stations that are built in the Mpumalanga area. This is completely different beast altogether. We are arguing that with the transmission losses, we know that there are significant transmission losses of between 30 and 50%. If you are transmitting from Mpumalanga to the Eastern Cape and you are losing almost half of what you have generated through transmission, this value proposition makes superior sense and duly requires consideration thereof. We also know that in both India and Brazil, these are the qualities of coal that are used. I think in the next couple of slides, we demonstrate that. This one is a bit of a long shot. We think there could be consideration for coal to gas. We know the needs of the country for gas, and that application of gas are significantly lower emitters of carbon and would also take the country towards its commitment to the climate change protocols. And there are several other possibilities that this coal can be used for. Honorable members, what I found very interesting in the past couple of weeks is that the United Kingdom has approved its first new deep coal mine in 3 decades. You'd know that the United Kingdom had moved away from coal and it had been leading on the discussion around applications of coal throughout the world. I'm not sure if they had known of this deep coal or not, but what I found very interesting is that when the country has needs, it would appear that countries make decisions that fulfill their basic needs. And here is a demonstration of the United Kingdom that has just approved mining of a deep coal mine, which coal mine would be contributing to their energy basket, as it were. This is an indication of the quality of coal, the quantities of coal, a case study from Stephen in 2011, published in 2011, confirms proven coal resources in India of just under 57 gigatons. These are dominated by bituminous coal, the low quality coal as it were. And we are finding that the ash content is very similar to what we are talking about in Multino. The volatile matter is slightly elevated. The CVs are very low. You can see that they range between 13 and 20. Now, the demand in electricity consumption had risen very sharply in India in the recent years. And in particular, in the past decade, production and consumption of electricity has increased almost two-thirds. And the Indians continue to use the coal that they have to generate the electricity that they need for the development requirements. I'm not sure the extent to which they are using technological intervention to mitigate the risks of emissions and their contribution to climate change, as it were. But the possibilities are there. Similarly, that study by Stephen, published in 2011, demonstrates the Brazilian situation, which is not very different from what we have put across today, what we have put across in terms of India and the situation as it prevails in Brazil. More than 85% of the coal in Brazil is used as for power station, and the 15% remaining is for industrial applications. Lastly, honorable members will recall that the tsunami situation in that affected Japan a couple of years ago, and unfortunately, two of their nuclear power stations were damaged with severe socio-economic and environmental impacts. And so what we now know is that Japan has commissioned 22 coal power stations. Those are busy being constructed. We know that Japan does not produce a gram of coal. It will be looking to the world for this supply of coal. And we know that the Japanese have also developed and invested in technology over the years. And I'm very confident that as they commission these power stations, they will be commissioning them responsibly in the context of the global conversation as it relates to climate change and the need for us to be environmental stewards while we are taking into consideration our socio-economic development needs. With that, I thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members, DG, and my Chair, Dr. Mati. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. Chair, without any waste of time, I'm now going to hand over to, you, to yourself. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members.
Okay, thank you, DG. Thank you, Mr. Mabuza. Sawubona baba Mati.
Nkokheli, siyabulisa. Sibonga kakhulu.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, because I'm not saying we've got plenty of time, but I don't want to limit you. You know the procedure, DG and Babu Mabuza, and Umhlonishwa, Umathe. Procedure is simple. As and when I feel that there is too much, I will cut there. But as I feel also that with your capabilities, you can consume all what is being raised, then I will allow so. So your friendship with the pen and paper will be quite, will come handy today again. So if it was somebody else, I would have tried to explain. I see the hand of Honorable Phillips. I see the hand of Honorable, I think it's Zungula. Angifuni mongameli ukubiza abantu ngamagama abahlonishwa. But I suspect it's Honorable Zungula. I see Honorable Milam. I see Honorable Kula. Yeah. Honorable Phillips. Oh, I see Honorable Mashaule. Honorable Phillips. Thank you. What's happening, Honorable?
Good morning. Please. Thank you. I'd just like to inquire the mine where the farmer has objected, the Molato mine. Is that going to be a surface mine or is it going to be an underground mine? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Zungula.
Thank you, Chair. I want to first welcome the report. I want to find out what are the air pollution ratios that are expected. Are they also in line with the undertakings we have as a country we have made with international partners or entities? Second question is, what mining method is planned? Is it strip mining or quarrying? If it's strip mining, what is in place to prevent combustion in the dumping area? The third question is, the envisaged tonnage is noted in the presentation. What is the expected lifespan of the mine? Then lastly, assuming that everything goes according to plan, what impact will this resource have on the energy mix? Thank you.
Okay, Honorable Mylam.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also welcome the presentation. It's good to know that we do still have mineral resources that are undeveloped. I am concerned, however, about the other impacts of coal mining in that area. As you are aware, the Eastern Cape is a ecologically precious area. It's a beautiful area. And I'm concerned about the impact of large numbers of coal trucks on the roads, the infrastructure, etc. And I'd like to know whether that has been taken into account. Secondly, Chairperson, the proposal to build a modular power plant similar to Letabo is interesting because right now the world's financial institutions are not prepared to finance coal-fired power plants. So it would essentially mean that it would be a government-funded project. Now, as we know, Eskom are 480 billion rand in debt, and their cost overruns on Medupi and Kusile were massive. The time overruns on those projects were massive. Given all of that, is it wise that we put all our faith in this potential solution that is unlikely to be financially viable and unlikely to be built in a reasonable time frame, etc.? I am well aware of all the environmental concerns, and I'm not even going to go there. But just on the finances of the coal fired power plant, is that likely? And maybe that's a question that the DG could give us a little bit of feedback on. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Kula.
No, Njabulela, hello. Greetings to the chair of the board of the Council for Geoscience, the CEO, Mabuza, the DG, fellow members of the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Chair, let me welcome the presentation by the Council for Geoscience and say to the Council that they must continue to do the good work that they are doing. It is much appreciated by some members of this Portfolio Committee that we wish them all the best in their future endeavors. My first question is around the early introduction of the presentation. The CEO spoke about the untapped coal resources yet to be quantified worth 100 billions of tons. I wanted to know what is the Council's plan and the DMF's plan to ensure that we tap into this huge potential of coal that we have in the country. My second question, Chair, is around the stakeholders' engagement which the Council embarked on in this project. They identified that the main challenge was experience with commercial farmers. I want to understand that what does this reactionary behavior, which presents itself as a challenge opposed to the work of the council in this project. Second point before the last chair is that I think it must be commendable the work that is being that is done by the Council for Geoscience, especially when it comes to the question that in this project we'll not be dealing with the challenge of acid mine drainage, which was a problem that was reoccurring in areas such as Monagate. I think it's quite commendable that we'll not be having that challenge. I think it's a reprieve to the department that it will not have to deal with such a challenge. Lastly, another point is that the presentation spoke to the country becoming a key role player in the rare earth element space on the global scale. And I think that is something that needs to be commended by some of us in this portfolio committee, that indeed you must appreciate, because we want to find expression in many spheres in the global space, and part of the red earth element is one of those. Lastly, Chair, Uba Umabuza spoke about the direct value that is estimated will be generated by the project of 122 billion. He even went further to say 122 billion rand. He went further to say that will not be enough. Can you expand to say, why will that not be enough? And in this 122 billion that is likely to be generated by the project, how much of that will go towards benefiting the local communities in the Eastern Cape and the fiscals of the country? Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mashaule.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Kula has just echoed my sentiments that the presentation by Council for Geoscience is so comprehensive that it even gives us what is happening internationally, because most often than not, we My apologies, the network is not good. I was saying we are often told about the international practices when people want to justify why we must abandon coal. But the example of the UK having led the discussion around moving from high carbon emissions to low carbon emissions, meaning the movement from coal mining to other sources of energy mix, is a perfect example that each and every country must first and foremost look at their own interests. And if what is proposed by other countries does not suit a particular country or our country, we put our country first. That's what they are doing exactly. That's why they are going back to mining coal. And maybe the initiative by the Council for Geoscience means that when they backtrack on abandoning coal and coming back, they will find us ready, because I suspect that there were no coal reserves anymore in the UK and they've discovered them, they are going back. We have them. We don't have to abandon what we have as a resource given by the Almighty. So I'm saying the comprehensiveness of the presentation doesn't leave any loophole to say, what about countries that are international that are not practicing this. It's very comprehensive, but it gives us even other countries that we must look at and say it means we are in the we are on track to go where we want to go. Now, as Honorable Kula has said, Chair, all we need to do now is to say we appreciate the work done by Council for Geoscience. We hope that the department will give necessary support to them, as well as the portfolio committee. I want to lobby the portfolio committee that let's support these initiatives, give them necessary support, and see it through to the latter, so that we create jobs in our country, we maintain the energy supply, reliable energy supply, and we take our country forward. So I'm saying let's support the initiative, Chair. Wherever they want support, we support that. It's a good initiative that needs support and nothing else. No negativities at all are warranted in this comprehensive work that they are doing. Thank you very much.
Okay. I nearly said, Honorable Mabos, I'm not saying you'll never be. No one knows the future. Can I give the DJ? DJ, have you disappeared? Unmute, mute here, DJ. Uziva lomlomo wena. Imakia yakho shows that you have muted. Press that button that says unmute. Can someone help the DG where he is? Whoever is next to the DG, just help him. Yes. Now he's connected. Yes, DG. I go. Your mic says. You muted now. Okay. Can I? Okay, what's the DG struggling? Babu Mache and Sonesh, I'm both. Just press unmute.
Okay. So, sorry about that, Chair. I just wanted to say that we'll start responding to the questions, starting with the question that was asked by Honorable Phillips.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Phillips, there's no mine yet. What the Council for Geoscience does is it does the geology. So we get on the ground, we do various tests on the ground, and we collect samples where there is exposure, and we normally, you know, as I said, when we take signs to society, the precursor to that is we have a comprehensive stakeholder engagement. We engage with authority. We engage with organized farmers. We engage with the various structures of society at large. So absolutely no mind contemplated. As you saw there in the presentation, all we're doing is characterizing the coal fields in this particular case, and taking into consideration, you know, a number of other factors. And I must say that the bulk of the commercial farmers were very embracing of the approach by the Council for Geoscience. They opened their gates and allowed our scientists on the ground to do their work. The difficulty arose with one particular farmer who blatantly refused access to the Council for Geoscience. I think Honorable Zungule, when you talk about the types of mining, is it going to be open cast, stripped or quarrying or underground and so on? Those are not the considerations at all from the work that we do as the Council for Geoscience. What we do is we characterize the deposit, and we took it from the deposit stage to an inferred resource. Now, there are a number of things that must happen, and those who are in the exploration and mining space will then do further work to ascertain the optimal methodology of extraction. Really, what we're proposing is a very small modular power plant, nothing of the magnitude of Medupi or Kusile by any means. We are looking at about 300,
maybe even
250,
less than 500
megawatts. 250 to 500 megawatts, depending on the on further feasibility studies that need to be taken. So in essence, because the entire energy demand is growing in South Africa, in that energy mix, we know that there is renewables, and renewables are going to grow. And we also know that there is provision for coal. And so what is being proposed here is not inconsistent with the energy mix proposition as envisaged in the IRP. So the expected life of mine, remember, this is not one mine, so this is the entire coal field. We are still going to do more work to characterize the basin, but from the 320 odd million tons that are estimated, you know, if you assume production of around 10 million per annum, then you are looking at a good 30 years from the current resource. It could be, and it is an absolute minimum estimate. So I would say you're looking at anything between 30 and 50 years, which is not inconsistent with the life of a power plant. The power plant life takes around 30 to 50 years. Honorable,
Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to add one important factor, talking about the energy mix, and just mention that in the Molteno area, Molteno Sterkstrom area, there's existing right now a 100 megawatt wind farm. And some of the coal deposits that we've seen are very close to that wind farm. In fact, when this wind farm asked for permission, they had to contact the prospecting rights of some of the people that had prospecting rights for coal. So there can be existence of coal and wind farm in the area and therefore increase the energy mix. But also, I think with the coal resource, there's a possibility of more jobs being created, because a wind farm doesn't create lots of jobs. But a coal plant can create more jobs, improve the life of living in the eastern area. I just wanted to add that.
All right. All right. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Madam, on the on the ecological prestige status of the Eastern Cape, I think you would agree, Honorable, that the whole country should be deemed as ecologically precious. And so to the extent that there are proposals for mining to take place, and I think it is a requirement, and DG will confirm, it is a requirement for ecological consideration. So, of course, any development of this resource will have to duly take into consideration such, and not limited to this ecologic prestige state of the Eastern Cape, which I fully concur with. And at this stage, remember that we are a research council. So we do research. So the commodities and the financing markets and all of those things are things that are outside of our confidence and competence. So our competence as geologists is really to look at the rocks, to look at what is there, to look at science, whether it is responding to the concerns of the nation and the world. And what we are putting to you is research and development. And so those consideration of the state of Eskom and its ability to build, or outside of that, I plead that we perhaps ask our DG to deal with those. Honorable Kula, thank you very much. We appreciate the compliments, and I think there was a question on the challenge with the commercial farmer. What does it mean for the work of CGS? In essence, look, for us, we prefer the relationship building type approach, that we engage and we indicate what is our work and what we do and so on. It's quite fortunate that here we only had one commercial farmer who refused. But if you had multiple farmers who refused, which I must say that it is uncharacteristic for a geological survey of any nation not to have access to any millimeter of land. A geological survey
in any part of the world is by law permitted to have access to all the land, because ours is not only to look at such things as the coal. You would recall that only 2 weeks ago, the Western Cape was inundated with earth tremors and so on. So those things are falling within our responsibility. And if we have some people in South Africa who are refusing the work of the Council for Geoscience, we think that that is very unfortunate. It is extremely unfortunate. It just happens in this case that it happened to be a singular incident. We do hope that as we continue unleashing our geoscience on the ground, that there will be greater appreciation of the work of the geoscience and its value to society. The direct value of 122 billion is based on the value on the ground, Honorable Kun. And what I was saying is that it is the absolute minimum. So that value can be augmented in numerous ways. The first one is in confirming whether there is additional coal resources. The second one is on the applications, when you start extraction, mining becomes a catalyst for economic activity. And designed properly, it can turn the plight of the people of the Eastern Cape. I know that it is a requirement for mines to contribute to development as the social license to operate, and with the implementations of the provisions of the social license to operate, a significant portion of that value can indeed be part of the development mantra of the Eastern Cape. But in the event that the whole value proposition was embraced, you know the importance of energy to development. I don't know how long if members have been in the Eastern Cape lately. You know, when you're traversing from town to town, you are staring poverty right into its face. And an installation of a modular power station can go a long way in changing that situation. That situation is problematic and may be projecting major problems for us as a country going forward, unless it is addressed, and it is addressed with the agency that it requires. Honorable Mashaule, I think yours were more comments, and we thank you for the comments, sir. Thank you very much, Chair of the CGS and Chair of the Committee, and DG.
Okay, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. My apologies with my gadget here. I don't know what happened. So it just actually stopped operating. Chair, I'll just be brief and deal with the question from Honorable Malam to add on what Mr. Mabuza has
said. You came back now with being three figures on the screen, but it's okay. I'm going to start.
No, my apologies, Chair. Chair, our role as government is to create a conducive environment for investors. And now, looking at the role that the CGS is playing, which is a developmental role, and this is within its mandate, we are responding to the needs of the country. And now, that is the level of appreciation that we really want members to have. other issues, we have other sector departments that are responsible for that, that perhaps at an appropriate time, those discussions can take place. But for us, it's to ensure that CGS, it plays its role of research and development and as a research institution as well. And so we are here today to present to you in terms of the work that we have done through CGS as a department. Yes, indeed. Just also to confirm on the question that Honorable Malam raised and Mr. Mabuza has responded to this question. Now, ours is actually to ensure that the actions that we take, they limit and also they mitigate against any harmful impact on the environment. And so we are quite very much alive to that fact, and we always make sure that whatever actions that we undertake, they try to limit and also to mitigate the harmful impact that may be caused to the environment. And so those were just actually additions that I thought I should make, Honorable Chair. But by and large, we really appreciate the feedback from the members and also the questions that the Honorable Members have raised. I think they are intended to enhance the work that we are doing. But then overall, we can observe that there is actually a positive feedback that we are getting with those questions that have been raised. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Okay, thank you very much. I think as we have said that the main purpose was to be able to get an update and a progress report on the project. If I understand well, DG and CGS, one of the main issues was that we're looking at what active role can institutions like CGS help in terms of looking at the surveying of available commodity resources. And to what extent could these assist in terms of the attraction of investment in those in the environment we are in? I think the matter then, I agree with the point that you've raised. The matter of the alternatives of energy mix or the different types of energy sources that we can look at, it will always remain an ongoing debate and discussions. I think even in this committee, it's going to be something that we'll always be seized with. Most definitely, the task and the duty of institutions like CGS is to continue to do research and development and put at the behest of those who are supposed to make functional propositions to be able to do so on the basis of what is presented to them. So I do understand this at some point why you shy away from anything that you will seek to say what is the route or direction to take, because that will remain always a political and a socio-economic terrain that we, those that are entrusted with power and authority, will have to make. So I understand the challenge that at some point you might be faced with. Honorable members, having said so, I think we have received the update. This is a project undertaken. I don't think that we, except if there is something that says it is not supposed to be what the department is doing. But to the best of my knowledge, it was a briefing on what is being done by some of the institutions under the department. And therefore, I want to then agree that if there is any, at any given moment, because I don't want someone to go, if there is any, at any given moment, something that with regard to this project or future or similar projects, because I think it's not the only one that you are undertaking. As you have said, continue to put at the behest of the nation what is it that is in front of us, and then those who are supposed to make decisions or are supposed to look at the pros and cons will then at that appropriate time do so. As long as it is the terrain where you are supposed to do that work. And also, I think it's important to say we hope that this could fast track and facilitate. I'm tempted to say maybe at some point we might DG and Sal from CGS, we might, instead of taking one project, we might have to go back to CGS and say, looking at this typical example of the work that CGS is doing, in a broader scale, in terms of exploration, surveying and mapping in relation to the commodities, to what extent and what do we have in a mass scale, and what could be the challenges, so that when we go and talk about South Africa being endowed with so much mineral wealth beneath the soil, we can say with a little bit of confidence that this is what we have, these are the challenges, and how can we fast track investment in line with what we have. That I must say, DG, which will also, we might also go to the department and say, if we've got so much endowment, what is then our challenge, our problem? Do we have a good and a better licensing regime in putting in place mechanisms that can fast track and generate economic development and create jobs in the process? Because if we are to do a better economic recovery exercise post this devastating virus, we will now go and have to go an extra measure and move away from the normal and be able to see if there is a need to do a very urgent intervention, let it be in this context. So I'm just saying, CGS, we at some point we might have to know the mineral wealth that is at our disposal, and you are the only, at this stage, I'm saying it with extreme caution, you are the only ones who can be able to assist us. And if then we can put that to say, this is it that we have in abundance, maybe in minimal, what then do we have to do? Is it a financial capacity challenge, a lack of interest in investment, or do we have the internal, our own internal challenges? Much more broader, beyond just as a one project exercise, and then we will then interact with the department and CGS to make such presentation in front of us. Can I release now the department?
Sure.
thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, TDGs, the Chair of CGS and CEO. Thank you, Chair.
You are comfortable with what I'm saying, eh?
Yes, Chair. We have noted your concluding remarks, Chair. We are comfortable with your concluding remarks, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Members, having said so, thank you very much. Let's meet tomorrow at 9 o'clock again. We will be dealing with the report of the oversight. It's still at a preliminary stage, but also because there were issues that we raised which we felt they were urgent, especially at a logistics level. We will also be dealing with those issues, and I suspect mainly that will be the main focus tomorrow. Mr. Miss Boss,
yes, sir.
And sorry, and Mr. Kotze, I hope we'll have time. Let's try and fast track the issue of the minutes. I don't want us to have a bundle of minutes that remain outstanding. So let's try and make it a point that amongst other issues tomorrow that will include will be the minutes. In fact, yes.
Actually, we scheduled the minutes today. I'm not sure whether we are deferring them for tomorrow. We've got four sets of minutes supposed to look at.
I saw the minutes. I've gone through them, but I don't know whether honorable members have received what the reports, the agenda. They were not on the agenda this morning. So I'm trying to manage the procedure so that I'm not told that I continued with minutes that when we started, one, the chair did not highlight. You can help, you can advise, but as far as I know, the chair did not highlight that we'll be dealing with the minutes today. Two, in the agenda which I had before me, I did not have the minutes. I only had the briefing. So that is why I'm saying in future, I'm making that consideration. We must have an item of the minutes, then it be the committee that says we won't have the minutes. We is unable to deal with the minutes at that time. Or it be the request to the committee that the minutes be rescheduled subject to whatever the circumstances would have been in that moment. But I don't have a problem with it. But in my, like I say, I'm looking at my agenda and the fact that from where I was sitting as the chair, I did not mention that we were going, but even if that is not the case, but if the agenda had the minutes, then I think we can go ahead. Just help me on that point of the advice.
Chair.
Okay, Chair. The agenda for today, it does highlight the minutes.
From
order to the presentation.
Okay, Mr.
Masale. No, Chair. I wanted to highlight that at 16:34 yesterday, which was the 19th of October, there was an email sent by Mr. Ariko that highlighted programs for today and tomorrow. In the agenda, there is an update by the Council for Geoscience on the Multino project. And two, there is consideration and adoption of outstanding minutes 1 and 2 September and 13 and 14 October 2020. So there is a consideration of adoption of minutes in the agenda, Chair.
My apologies to you. I'm carrying, I think it's for last week, where it has got the agenda. I'm trying to check when is the date, but it's fine. Let me let's go to the minutes, honorable members. Fortunately, I've got this one.
I have flighted the minutes of 1 September, Chair.
Yeah, I'm dealing with mine. Okay, honorable members, the minutes of the first of September. It's page 1. Oh yeah, now I'm clear. Page 2. Page 3. I don't want to say is it page 4. No, not page 4. The last page. Any matters arising, honorable members? No matters arising at all. Oh, no. Any mover? I made a mistake. Any mover of the minute of the 1st of September?
I move for the adoption, Chair.
Any seconder?
Chair, I second the move for the adoption of the minute.
Okay. The minutes of the no matters arising, I guess. In the absence of matters arising, minutes of the 2nd. So the quarterly reports. I don't know where page 1 starts, but members can choose. Oh, I see your pages. Page 1. Then page 1 and then page 2. There must be a cutoff point. Page 3, which starts with number 3.
Chair,
as myself.
On page 3, sentence number 8 says, according to the department, it should be department's internal controls and project management principles have been implemented to address underspending in the department. The department stated that their constant reporting to both the ESCO and the minister, the department stated that there is constant reporting to both the ESCO and the minister. So I have corrected 2 things, Chair. Now, I don't... point number 9, it reads, on the underspending on employees,
the department stated that as EXCO resolved to pull all filling of posts on hold following the merger of the two departments to ensure that the excess list is minimized and to ensure that there is no duplication. According to the department, the process is panning out well. They further noted that their excess list is minimal at this stage. I just need clarity. What excess list? What is this excess list, Chair, that they are talking about? On that, I don't know, Chair. I want to move to bullet 13, and I don't know which page is that.
It's the next page.
Can I go ahead?
We start. Let's deal with the first one. We start with 11. I don't know. I thought the first point was an emphasis of what the department was saying. For instance, according to the department, I thought it should be a comma. Internal controls and project management principles have been implemented to address underspending in the department. I thought there should have been a comma instead, but I don't know. People can help. And then the following sentence should be saying the department stated that there is constant reporting to both ESCO and the minister, and therefore processes are being controlled. Instead of so processes are under control, and there is improvement, or there will be improvement.
Chair?
Yes, Mr. Masha.
On the first sentence, according to the department's internal controls, I should assume that, I should think that the correction that is suggested there would be correct, because we are talking about internal controls and management and project management principles. And who do they belong to? They belong to the department. So it's correct to say the department's internal controls and project management principle.
Chairperson?
Honorable Mailem?
Chairperson, I respectfully disagree with Honorable Maswale, and I agree with you. According to the department, internal controls and project management principles have been implemented to address underspending in the department. So what that first bit is saying is that the department is reporting that they have implemented internal controls and project management principles. So I would go according to the department, comma.
Okay. I don't want to. DG?
Hi, Chair.
That's what happens if you quickly leave the meeting. What is the correct interpretation of the, well, that's was the understanding of this, the first part. What is your correct interpretation of what you said? Well, we're not putting you in our case. We want to deliver you the way that you said it.
I think, Chair, the proposal that you have made, because, I mean, is how do you put your wording? And so we'll go with what you have suggested here, Chair.
No. We didn't suggest here. We are interpreting what the department said. So that is why I would not have given you, if it was about us, what we said in the meeting, I would not have given you, because then, but you see, when you report, this is based on the report you gave to the committee.
Next. Chairperson, can I assist?
Yes. Now,
I'm persuaded that if we are saying according to what the department has said, then your suggestion is correct. According to what the department has said to us.
Yes, that's why I said that is.
In that case, the your suggestion and the secondment by Honorable Mailem would be correct in this regard.
Okay. Because we must deliver them the way they said it. Okay. I think the second part, we all agree that you raised with regards to the next part of the sentence. Then you say on the underspending on employees, the department stated that ESCO resolved to put all filling of posts on hold following the merger of the two departments to ensure that the excess list is minimized and to ensure that there is no duplication. My understanding, if I'm answering your question again, the department can tell me maybe they did not specify, it may not be the... My understanding was that according to their report was that in the excess list, because department were in merger, they had to have the list instead of going for something anew. And based on what then when the department have been able to merge, they will consider on the list so that the list is reduced instead of being more. But I'm also subject to interpretation on this one. Remember, you were two departments with different separate employees. Like we were saying before, you would have had, for instance, a list of people of on the even at a senior level. But when you integrate the departments, you then have to reduce the number. It means there will be people who are in excess. So instead of going out for something new on your list of employees, you look at using the internal potential excesses to reduce the list. That's I thought, what the department was meaning in terms of the list.
So Chairperson, without a dialogue, are you saying that they are referring to an excess list of posts?
Yes. Posts, because that's what it says. If you look at it at the top, at the beginning, né, it says on the underspending on employees. The department stated that ESCO resolved to put all filling of posts on hold following the merger of the two departments. So when you read it, in conjunction with, I think we choose the better word.
There are weekly questions.
I hear you.
The strong word would have been freezing. Some people don't like in public service to say you are freezing post. So they had to put post on hold. Okay. There was something, honorable members. I think that is the issue. On page 11, honorable Mashaule. Oh, you're saying page 11. I don't remember. On point 11, which is another page. Now I've forgotten even which page is it.
No, Chair, I had indicated point number 13.
Oh, 13, yes, starting from, the page that starts from 11.
Yes.
Number 13, okay.
It says, on the decommissioning and decontamination program for nuclear facilities in South Africa, the department stated that the project delays are due to the lack of appointment of an external service provider. Lack of appointment. It should be lack of appointment, not the lack appointment of. Are you with me, Chair?
Due to lack of appointment of an external service provider, is that what you say?
Yes.
Okay, I think you are correct.
I rest my question.
Okay, any other matter, Ari? The next page, which starts with 17, I forgot it now. Any matter? Okay. In light of that, any move of the minutes?
Chair, I would like to move.
Chairperson.
Yes, any seconder?
Chair.
I second, yes. Chairperson.
Chairperson, before seconding.
Who's that?
It's Langa.
Oh, Mr. Lang, Honorable Lang, sorry, I didn't see you when you came in.
Okay,
yes, Chairperson. Mr. Lang.
If maybe we can check, I think maybe page one, Chairperson. I think my initials are not proper there. Maybe if you get a chance as well, my initials are T.M. Langa.
No, teacher.
T.M. Langa. Okay.
Chair.
Honorable Miller.
Chair, I'm sorry to do this, but I'm just a little confused as to who exactly the alternate is for the EFF on this committee. You know, some days it's Mr. Ntinjane and some days it's Mr. Langa. And I'd really like to know what the ATC and the committee section has as the alternate.
No, maybe you were not present. We did report that Mr. Langa has been appointed as the alternate, and therefore Mr. Honorable Ntinjane is no longer part of the committee.
Does he want to choose for us now?
No, don't worry, Mr. Langa. We are explaining.
In the meeting. There was communication. Okay.
No, there is a written submission. Honorable Langa is the alternate. Honorable Sonyane still remains the member of the committee. Honorable Ntinjane has been substituted with Honorable Langa.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, there was a mover and a second of the minutes. Any matters arising, that is the minutes of the second. Nothing. Minutes of the 13th of October. Page one. Page two. Page three, which has got page five. Any more of the minutes? Any mover of the minutes?
Yes, Chair. I'll move to accept them.
That is Honorable Phillips.
That's correct.
Any seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Oh, Kamala Makosikazi. Okay. Any matters arising? Nope, minutes agreed to. My phone must always go to minutes of the 14th. Page one. Page two. Page three. Okay. Any move of the minutes?
Chair, move adoption.
Okay, any seconder?
I second the adoption, Chair.
Okay. Any matters arising? In the absence of matters arising, can you agree the meetings are agreed to? Thank you very much, honorable members. You did very well. We will do our level best to improve where we need to, as I suggested that we will try our level best to bring each and every meeting with the following minutes. Secondly, we will look at what then becomes the way forward. You will recall we have made a commitment that every time we have a committee meeting, there has to be a final recommendation out of that, or a further exploration of the work that has to be done beyond what would have been presented. But we continue to avoid to have a discussion just for the sake of it. It must be a discussion that must have outcomes and finalization of issues. Having said so, honorable members, thank you very much. Let's meet again tomorrow for the discussion on the preliminary report and the concerns raised with regards to the activities during the oversight visit. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Oi, oi, comrade Betty, oi, oi.